Who is there for heroes of the families left behind when a service member or first responder dies or is catastrophically injured in the line of duty? Who helps our country's homeless veterans? And who helps our nation to never forget 9/11? Let me tell you who: the Tunnel to Towers Foundation. The foundation's Gold Star, Fallen First Responder, Smart Home, and Homeless Veteran programs comprise their In the Line of Duty programs. They're all dedicated to honoring our nation's heroes and their families. The foundation's Never Forget programs engage people in 9/11 remembrance across America. Over 80 runs, walks, and climbs a year. Dozens of golf outings. And the Tunnel to Towers 9/11 Institute is educating kids kindergarten through 12th grade to help our nation keep its vow to never forget. More than 95 cents of every dollar you donate to Tunnel to Towers goes to its programs. Never forget the sacrifices of our country's greatest heroes. Donate $11 a month to Tunnel to Towers at T2T.org. That's T, the number 2T.org.
More Than a Movie is back with Season 2. I'm your host, Alex Fumero. And each week, I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to 500 Greatest Songs, a podcast based on Rolling Stone's hugely popular, influential, and sometimes controversial list. I'm Brittany Spanos.
And I'm Rob Sheffield. We're here to shed light on the greatest songs ever made and discover what makes them so great.
From classics like Fleetwood Mac's Dreams to the Ronettes' Be My Baby, and modern day classics like The Killers' Mr. Brightside.
Listen to Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Songs on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Buck Sexton Show podcast. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
We still have more questions than answers when it comes to last night's FBI raid on former President Trump's Florida home. According to reports, the search linked to an investigation into his handling of classified and sensitive material. But as of yet, the DOJ has offered no explanation as to what triggered the raid on Trump's residence. I'll have the latest in tonight's Hold the Line. Welcome to Hold the Line. I'm Buck Sexton. A raid by the FBI on a former president and likely presidential candidate again on his residence at Mar-a-Lago. The FBI swooped into Mar-a-Lago. Almost hard to believe when you first see the headlines, but this is the country we live in now. This is the reality of dealing with the Biden regime, the thuggishness and the political praetorian acts of the FBI. It is a mess. And obviously, this is just the beginning. Here was President Trump's response to the raid on Mar-a-Lago. It is prosecutorial misconduct, the weaponization of the justice system, and an attack by radical left Democrats who desperately don't want me to run for president in 2024. Especially based on recent polling, and who will likewise do anything to stop Republicans and conservatives in the upcoming midterm elections. Such an assault could only take place in broken third world countries. I mean, that is what a lot of people are thinking about with this. That this is the kind of action you see in dictatorships that have sham elections, because everyone knows that if the regime in power is challenged by anybody, they'll just arrest everyone. Or if there is a transfer of power, the new regime will arrest everybody from the previous regime to make sure they get to stay in power in perpetuity. This is a crossing of the Rubicon moment, as so many have noted. It is obviously the case that this is unprecedented. This is a major action, and it lines up really only two possibilities. On the one hand, is that this is all pretextual, that the National Archives and the ongoing investigation of documents that could either be in presidential or National Archives custody is essentially being used here as an excuse for a clear political attack on former President Trump in an effort to undermine him and to make it effectively impossible for him to run for president again. That's one possibility. The other possibility is that they are going to unveil or already have an indictment waiting for President Trump, that they will bring criminal charges against the former president. This would be the first time in history that would be the case. And obviously, the political ramifications of that would be tremendous. What does the, and earth-shattering, and honestly pretty terrifying too, but we'll see where this all goes. Karine Jean-Pierre, the White House press secretary, was asked today about whether or not the White House was given a heads up about this raid on Mar-a-Lago. Here's how that went.
The FBI is serving a search warrant on the former president's residence in Florida. Was the president or anyone at the White House aware of that search warrant? Or has anyone at the White House or the president been briefed in the aftermath of that search warrant being executed?
No. The president was not briefed, was not aware of it. No. No one at the White House was given a heads up. No, that did not happen.
No. Not briefed. No heads up. Nothing. Really? A little bit of a constitutional refresher here for the libs, the Democrats out there. The DOJ is under the purview of the president. So the attorney general, for example, does actually work for the president of the United States. Now, he can be impartial and non-political, which is clearly not what's going on here, in the application of statutes and the usage of Justice Department power, but the DOJ does actually answer to the president. This is why we have the special counsel statute, and this is obviously something that the Democrats are trying to avoid right now as a conclusion that people could draw, because the current administration is overseeing a raid by the FBI on the home of the political opposition boss. That's really what's going on here. Like we said, this is what you see in dictatorships. Here's House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy tweeting out, "I've seen enough. The Department of Justice has reached an intolerable state of weaponized politicization. When Republicans take back the House, we will conduct immediate oversight of this department, follow the facts, and leave no stone unturned. Attorney General Garland, preserve your documents and clear your calendar." So he's promising that there will be House hearings into this when Republicans are in charge, when Republicans have control of the House. We'll see. That's a ways away. But are Democrats also shocked by this? Of course not. They are in favor of it. They're cheering it on in every way that they can. And they use these phrases like, here's Nancy Pelosi. Nobody is above the law. Watch.
Does it strike you as a pretty serious step for the Justice Department to take?
Yes, I think it does. I was questioning it because all I saw on my phone was that Donald Trump said that the visit took place and described it in pretty harsh terms. It would be interesting to find out exactly what the warrant was in order to have, what the order was to have a search warrant and for what purpose. We believe in the rule of law, and that's what our country is about, and no person is above the law, not even the President of the United States.
No person is above the law. Interesting. What about Hillary Clinton and her handling of classified documents, which clearly fell under the recklessness component of the statute on handling of classified information? And they just said, yeah, no, she's running for president. We're not going to. Oh, you mean that we've already seen that there are two justice systems, one for the left, one for the right in this country. That's obvious. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis stepping up here with a tweet. The raid of Mar-a-Lago, he wrote, is another escalation in the weaponization of federal agencies against the regime's political opponents. While people like Hunter Biden get treated with kid gloves, now the regime is getting another 87,000 IRS agents to wield against its adversaries, Banana Republic. I do think that's important for everyone to understand. The Democrats are expanding the authoritarian bureaucracies and the bureaucrats who work for them, of course, at the same time that we're seeing they wield the bureaucracy, the apparatus, as I call it, for their own benefit in every way that they can. Virginia Governor Glenn Youngkin tweeted, a stunning move by the FBI and DOJ. This same DOJ labeled parents in Loudoun County as terrorists and failed to enforce federal law to protect justices in their homes. Selective, politically motivated actions like this have no place in our democracy. That's absolutely correct. It's appalling what they've done here. And they're going to say in a few weeks, oh, but there's a records issue and classification or whatever. Even CNN legal analyst Paul Callan said that a Presidential Records Act violation is not enough to justify what the libs, the Democrats, and their FBI just did. Watch.
I think one thing everyone agrees on is there are a lot of questions here, Paul. A lot of questions. There are not a lot more answers to come. We've heard a lot about the Presidential Records Act now and have for quite some time. If this becomes a Presidential Records Act violation, not more, do you think it is enough to warrant all of this?
No, it's not enough to warrant all this. And this is a daring and dangerous move by the Department of Justice to serve a warrant on a former president and to raid his personal residence.
Yeah, it is. We'll have more on this with senior columnist at townhall.com, Kurt Schlichter, coming up. First, let's talk about one of my favorite new sponsors, Built Bar. These things are amazing. If you're looking for a delicious treat, but you don't want a ton of fat and calories you don't need, you got to try a Built Bar. I just had one this morning. I have one every day now. Built Bars are high protein, low carb, low calorie, low fat. They taste amazing. I'm blown away at how good they are for you, actually. They're gluten-free, important for me, I have celiac disease, keto-friendly, made with collagen protein, which your body absorbs very efficiently. Lots of health benefits from it. They're all covered in 100% real chocolate. They have so many amazing flavors, mint brownie, coconut, salted caramel, cookies and cream, churro, peanut butter brownie. You got to see for yourself. I just ordered another box this past weekend. I love them. Get a variety box. You'll see all the different flavors. Then you can pick if you got one favorite. But I'm telling you, they're all great. This is a fantastic, fantastic new way to get a snack in during your day. Go to built.com. That's built.com. Very easy. But make sure you use promo code BUCK15 to get 15% off your order. Again, built.com. Promo code BUCK15 for 15% off your order. Kurt Schlichter stops by in a moment. One of President Trump's former biggest rivals, New York former Governor Andrew Cuomo, has given a somewhat surprising reaction to news of the FBI raid on Mar-a-Lago. Earlier today, Cuomo tweeted, "The DOJ must immediately explain the reason for its raid, and it must be more than a search for inconsequential archives, or it will be viewed as a political tactic and undermine any future credible investigation and legitimacy of January 6th investigations." Meanwhile, many top Republicans have offered tepid responses. This morning, South Carolina Senator Tim Scott said, "We shouldn't jump to any conclusions. Watch.
We need to let this play out and see exactly what happens, but we should all have been stunned and surprised and shocked at what happened yesterday. The real question is, A, what is the Federal Records Act? And B, what are we talking about? It has to be something of incredible magnitude for at least my side of the aisle to say that was warranted. Without that, I think we're going to find ourselves in a very big mess as it relates to the credibility of the FBI.
I actually spoke to Senator Scott later after that interview on radio, and he has got a little more fired up about it since then. He got a lot of pushback after that appearance this morning. So rightfully so, I think he realizes that this is a everybody batten down the hatches moment, certainly for the GOP. Joining me now, senior columnist at townhall.com and author of the newly released We'll Be Back, The Fall and Rise of America, Kurt Schlichter. Kurt, what did you think when you just saw the news break that this really happened? The FBI raided Trump's home.
You know, I'm actually making a turn at that intersection behind me. And the guy I'm talking to says, "Hey, you heading to Florida to be Trump's lawyer?" "What? What are you talking about? They raided the president." I was like, "What?" Because it's incomprehensible. It's so wrong on so many levels that it's really hard to imagine. And I got to say, you know, looking at that clip of Tim Scott, I think right there, he may have just stepped in for the presidential campaign. Because if you can't work up some cold fury over this banana republic, move, I don't need you in the White House. I don't need anybody who doesn't know what time it is. And right now, it's batting down the hatch. It's time. This is a red line.
You know, you understand sensitive classified material from your time in the military. I was in the CIA. I know about classification. To me, the notion that a National Archives records demand effectively under the guise of some classification dispute would be enough for Merrick Garland, let's be clear, the Attorney General, to authorize this FBI raid on a former president's home? It should be unthinkable, but to me, I wonder, is this just where we are now, that they're willing to? Because I want to know, Kurt, if they don't charge him, well, then how the hell can they justify the raid?
Buck, I've got so many comments. My first is I'm a little confused. Wait a minute. Having classified information outside of a skiff when being a political figure is now against the law again. Nice to know. The second thing is, I don't care what their pretense is. There is nothing that they can tell me that's going to justify this. Nothing. They spent 6 years trying to frame this guy, frame him and the people around him through active lying. They have zero credibility. There is nothing they can do or say that's going to be remotely legitimate. The question isn't, well, we need to see how this plays out. No, we need to counterattack. And we need to cause these people the pain they've attempted to cause us. Because it's not enough that we kind of decide, okay, back to the norms. No, they have to pay a price. And I'm counting on the Republicans to do it. I don't think the Republicans are going to have any choice but to do it, because I think the base is going to demand it. You know, we were informed that Dobbs was going to mobilize the Democrats and really energize them for the election. This is our Dobbs right here, right now. Even the most moderate, soft-spined Republicans, you know, Mitt Romney.
Well, actually, can I have you here? Speaking of soft-spined Republicans, I mean, you walked right into this one. Mitch McConnell, here he is, not talking about it. Watch.
What is your reaction to the FBI raid yesterday?
I'm here today to talk about the flood and to recover from the flood.
Okay. Nothing to say on this one. I've seen some other GOP voices with versions of, we need to see how this plays out. We need to see what the facts are. I mean, to your earlier point.
I know what the facts are.
We know what the facts are. And they, for years, they did the whole Mueller special counsel. We need to see where this is going. It was a scam. The whole thing was a lie. So we're supposed to play this game again? I mean, how many times can we get fooled?
Well, you know, I wrote last week on Town Hall last Thursday that Mitch McConnell's losing a step. He used to be the greatest parliamentary knife fighter the Republic had ever seen. He personally kept up Garland off the Supreme Court. That was great. But he's been screwing up and screwing up. He's screwed up so bad he had Schumer fool him. Okay. Schumer's no Einstein. All right. It's not like he's taking a particle physics professorship when he leaves the Senate. Yet he got fooled. And then this was just a disaster. This is exactly the opposite of what we want. You've got a bunch of candidates out there saying, I'm not going to support McConnell if I'm elected. And these guys are coming to the Senate. And I got to tell you, this kind of abdication in light of an event of historic proportions, bad historic proportions, does not bode well for his future as a Senate Majority Leader.
Kurt, you're a military man, a lawyer, and a realist. Do you think the Democrats have the gall to criminally prosecute Donald Trump, likely over a documents dispute?
They're going to. And they're going to do it in Washington, D.C., so that they have a 95% active Democrat jury pool. No, they are going to do it. There are no limits. There are no guardrails, because these people are stupid. They are corrupt. They are ahistorical. They don't understand the historical implications of these kinds of actions. And they have this weird sense of their own accomplishment and their own morality, none of which is supported by anything like evidence. They will absolutely do this because they are fools. And the consequences are going to be terrible, but mostly for them. Because you can't pull all the blocks out of the Jenga tower and insist that it still keeps standing. It's going to fall, and it's going to fall on them.
Wow. My friend Julie Kelly said 2 weeks ago, she's 99% sure they're going to bring a federal indictment against Donald Trump for something.
Of course they will.
Of course they will. So you're right there with her. You have a certainty.
I think it's a coin flip.
No, I think
they're going to do it, and I think they're going to regret it greatly.
We'll see. Kurt, always illuminating, sir. Thank you.
Thank you.
As the House prepares to take up the so-called Inflation Reduction Act, a bunch of studies show it will do little, if anything, to actually reduce inflation. The First TV's Tina Lowe joins us to give her take next. I want to talk to you about protecting your online data for a minute. A lot of companies promise your privacy is guaranteed, but we know that's not true. That's why you need a new privacy and cybersecurity application tool called Secure. It's spelled S-E-K-U-R. Secure is using proprietary encryption and offering secure instant messaging and email. With Secure, all of your communications based on servers and data centers hosted in Switzerland without using the big tech platforms. Privacy is a big issue now. Secure will never mine your data, never ask for your phone number. You can send emails to your doctor, banker, lawyer, anyone else with total confidence you're not being spied on by your internet provider or big tech. Secure is your solution to stop the constant theft of your digital identity. It costs only $5 for the messenger, only $10 for the messenger and email combination package. Go to secure.com and take back your privacy today. That's S-E-K-U-R.com. And use promo code BUCK for 25% off. We'll be right back. The so-called Inflation Reduction Act now heads to the House of Representatives, where lawmakers are expected to vote on the legislation at the end of the week. On Sunday, the Senate passed the bill in a vote of 50-50, but plus the vice president, so kind of 51. Among other things, the act offers tax rebates for the green technology out there, like electric cars and solar panels. It gives the IRS $79.6 billion over 10 years. One thing it is not actually expected to do by anyone who's being honest and looking at the numbers, reduce inflation. So what does this mean for middle-class Americans moving forward? Here to break it all down for us, the numbers, the economics, the inflation, the monetary policy, Keynesian stuff, Milton Friedman stuff, all the fancy econ. Tina Lowe, commentator of the Washington Examiner and contributor here at The First. Tina, how are they going to make this go? It just seems so crazy to me.
Yes. So here's the thing about the Inflation Reduction Act. To its credit, and the competition is not very stiff, it's theoretically the largest single action that Congress has done to reduce the deficit in a decade. But mind you, that's also in part only because we spent the last 2 years blowing out the deficit under the guise of COVID, right? So it's not that impressive to say I went from eating, you know, 5,000 calories a day to 4,000 calories a day. So we'll just start off with that one.
I feel a little attacked, but keep going.
The real issue is that even though reducing the deficit does, in theory, reduce inflation, that's not really the case when inflation is at 9%. You know, if Biden had done this at the beginning, you know, March 2021, the beginning of his presidency, at that point, the Fed had already infused the economy with $4 trillion more dollars from the start of COVID. So that brought the total money supply around $19 trillion into circulation. $4 trillion of that is huge. If Biden had passed this bill, which is really not an Inflation Reduction Act, just a social spending package that is luckily deficit neutral, slightly deficit reducing, ever so slightly. Remember, $300 billion is not that much when we're talking about our federal debt pushing $30 trillion. But then what Biden did is by adding another $2 trillion into the economy, we're now at $21 trillion, or that is nearly a third of all dollars in circulation have been printed since February 2020. When you have a situation like that, reducing the possibility or reducing the growth, the rate of growth of those interest payments on our federal debt, which are slated to eat up 9% of our economic output by the half of the century, still doesn't really do that much, right? Like, we are already talking about literally exponential growth here. We are already talking about, you know, all of the CBO baselines that we were talking about, fiscal cliffs and Social Security insolvency and our interest, you know, taking in half of all tax revenue, right? So in 30 years from now, 40% of your tax bill that you pay Uncle Sam is literally just going down to paying federal debt. There's a case to be made that does reduce inflation. But again, not when the issue is that we're at 9% inflation. Those new inflation numbers come out tomorrow. And while it may have a little bit of an artificial reduction because the gas price reduction, the real problem hasn't changed, which is that the money supply is way too high. And unfortunately, we have not had it so a Congress realistically has the will or the power to reduce inflation in any real terms for pretty much the existence of the entire Federal Reserve for over a century now. The fact is that in the 70s and in the 80s during the Volcker era, it was up to the Fed to do it. And once again, it's up to the Fed to do it because the IRA, the so-called Reflation Reduction Act, just won't do it.
Brian Deese, by the way, Tina, I wanted to have you react to this, you know, economic advisor in the Biden White House saying that the American people will see the benefits immediately of this bill. Watch.
Consumers are going to start to see benefits almost immediately.
How?
13 million Americans are going to see lower health insurance premiums this fall because of this bill. Seniors and people with chronic conditions are going to see their out-of-pocket costs for prescription drugs capped at $2,000. And frankly, when this bill passes, utility CEOs have come and told us, I'm sure they tell you the same, when the tax incentives for clean energy pass, they pass those right on to their consumers. They rate base them, and so they show up in consumers' utility bills. All of those things will start happening in the short term as we're laying the foundation for longer-term reforms as well.
Tina, you wrote in the Washington Examiner on this Inflation Reduction Act, beyond the political implications of sicking the IRS on the middle class, its real problem is that it is not an Inflation Reduction Act at all. It is a deficit-reducing social spending bill that cannot reduce inflation in any meaningful way. So it's not an Inflation Act or Inflation Reducing Act. What do you make of the Biden White House saying, but it's going to have all these amazing benefits for everybody?
Well, so remember, one of the primary issues, inflation is always a monetary phenomenon, right? We're in this position because the Fed decided to turn into just a money printer. They used COVID as the excuse. That's not why we needed to print all the money. They just decided to do it. And the fact is, by Biden, you know, he talks about we're lowering costs for people's health care. In the long run, that's not so sure, because if we're driving less medical innovation because you're capping the costs that pharmaceutical developers are getting, that's not in the long run going to cut down costs for people. But in the immediate short term, that doesn't reduce inflation at all. That's only going to make it so a small percentage of Americans who will benefit from this sort of rent-seeking behavior by the federal government, so they can rig the game. For the rest of the people, there's still too much money chasing too few goods. That is the textbook definition of inflation. And also couple that with the fact that Congress's actions are very ambivalent, frenetic, and makes no sense. So for instance, this corporate minimum tax, this 15% corporate minimum tax, which I think is possibly the most defensible thing about the bill, right? Like, I'm really not going to go to the mat for Amazon to say, oh, it's okay that Amazon only pays 5% taxes while small businesses across America, you know, spent years until the Trump tax credits paying up to 30%, right? But, you know, so Tesla is now going to have to pay. Tesla pays somewhere around 6% corporate tax. Now they're going to have to pay that 15% corporate minimum tax. But in the same bill, Tesla is getting a handout because the federal government is now going to subsidize the cost of new electric vehicles. You know, you have 50% of all of the cost of that corporate minimum tax will be borne by the manufacturing sector, which literally the week prior, Congress just gifted with, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars in a bailout in the form of the CHIPS Act. So what does that really mean? Ultimately, it is a lot about the headlines. These are not rules that are relaxing the regulatory regimes that are hamstringing the supply end of things, that do make it difficult to make things in America. And instead it just tax here, use that revenue here. It's no real structural change. It just, once again, the government thinking that it can determine supply and demand better than the free market, better than consumers.
Tina, thanks so much. Good to see you.
Thank you, Buck.
Despite irrefutable evidence that the COVID-19 vaccines do not prevent the spread of the disease, vaccine mandates remain on the books in a number of places, including New York City. We'll talk to radio host Kim Iverson about that when we come back. But first, I want to talk to the owners of timeshares, especially those who are upset. Their yearly dues have nearly doubled. In most cases, your timeshares will be passed from your generation to the next, with those fees included. It's crazy the annual fees never stop, even after you quit using your property. Well, I do have a solution. Get some peace of mind from my friends at Lone Star Transfer. This family-owned business has an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau and has over 16,000 satisfied customers. Lone Star has over 15 years of experience in the timeshare disposal business and a 99% success rate. Say goodbye to those fees. With customer service like Lone Star's, they treat you as if you're a member of their family. They will personally make your experience a pleasant one. Lone Star Transfer guarantees the release of all liability to your timeshare in writing and in a specific time frame. Give Lone Star Transfer a call for a free no-obligation consultation. 844-284-4739. That's 844-284-4739 or online at lonestartransfer.com. We'll be right back with more. Hold the line. Country of Denmark is becoming the first in the world to put the brakes on the COVID-19 vaccines for people under the age of 18. This from Alex Berenson. Children and young people only very rarely become seriously ill from COVID-19 with the Omicron variant. From July 22nd, it will no longer be possible for children and young people under the age of 18 in Denmark to get the first jab. And from September 1st, 2022, it will no longer be possible to get the second jab. Despite the questionable effectiveness of the vaccine, some cities, including New York, have opted to keep mandates in place with absolutely no scientific justification or update of the data involved. Join me now, somebody who asks the real questions about the shots, about Fauci and all the rest of it, Kim Iverson, host of The Kim Iverson Show. Kim, great to see you.
Thanks for having me. Great to be here.
So I'm wondering, you know, there's been this data that came out recently as well that showed, I think it was a large county in California, where 60% of fatalities in a month period recently were fully vaccinated against COVID. So we were being told a year ago, I remember this, I'm sure you do, that it was a pandemic of the unvaccinated. And effectively, if you get the shot, you won't get really sick and die. That is not true. I'm just wondering, when do they actually update that?
Yeah, what's interesting now is that, so they're admitting now that fully vaccinated people can die from this vaccine. And in fact, now it's a majority of people. But of course, they continue to say, well, that's because the majority of people are fully vaccinated. So of course, it's just a numbers game. But when you actually, and that would be fine if it was one or two people compared to thousands of people previously, but the numbers are still quite high for people who are dying, depending on where in the world they are and at what phase of the virus they're in. Some areas of the world are just now kind of getting their first wave. But, you know, one thing that's also really interesting is they've changed the definition of fully vaccinated. So when you look at that data, even when they say 60% are fully vaccinated, what do they mean by that? Is that two doses, three doses, or four? And others, they would say, that are not fully vaccinated, they can't call them unvaccinated anymore, if you notice, because many of those people had at least one or two doses of the vaccine. They're just not considered fully vaccinated. So it's just, you know, when will, they're kind of admitting it in the slow way of admitting it, right? They're not going to come out and just say we were wrong. They're instead saying you got to keep dosing up. And now in the fall, we're going to come out with a new variant of this vaccine for the new variant of the virus, which is quickly shifting. You know, they're going to give us the Omicron. We're already beyond, you know, they're still calling it Omicron, but they're like Omicron variant three.
Do we know, by the way? I mean, I know that the Pfizer CEO, Dr. Bourla, I know that he has already said that there'll be new vaccine. There'll be a new vaccine in the fall. But is it going to be a boost to the already existing regimen of now four shots? Or is it going to be a whole new series? Is it going to be two shots? Do we have any indicators about this so far?
That is a good question. That is the same question I have. What does this mean? Is this a whole new vaccine that they're going to say needs to have new doses? So a two doses, and then potentially boosters on top of that for the next year? Or is this an additional booster that is just a booster formulated for the variant of Omicron, which many of us have already caught and it's already gone through and we're already moving on to a new variant by the time we get to fall. So they're not moving very fast. And that was something that they promised with mRNAs. You know, the whole promise of mRNA was that the technology would allow us to just swiftly put out new vaccines in a matter of days once we got the coding or what the sequencing. And clearly that's not happening. But it is a good question. I don't know if this is going to be a whole. My guess is if Big Pharma is in charge, they're going to want a whole new round of two doses plus boosters.
Well, they have said, vaccine. I mean, Bourla and others at the top of the Big Pharma apparatus have said that you basically should expect to be getting COVID shots for the rest of your life. I mean, that's already out there that, you know, you've got to stay up to date, they say, right? Which is amazing that we had a business model where the government mandated people get a product that in so many millions of cases they didn't want, and that there is also no liability for, no matter what we find out about the vaccines over the long run, which has been, you know, this has been very tough for a lot of people to take. But how do you think the politics of this is going to play out in advance of the midterms? I mean, here in New York City, New York Times is saying about the vaccine mandate, which I think is still on the books in New York. Eric Adams stopped enforcing, the mayor here, the vaccine mandate for New York City businesses. The mayor's office said it had no plans to begin inspecting businesses or begin fining those that are not in compliance. Well, the only reason that they're even being asked about this is because technically there's still a vaccine mandate here. And also, they could always bring it back even if they stopped, unless they admit that it didn't work.
Yeah, that's the interesting part, that they're not willing to remove it from the books, right? So they're just saying, okay, we'll turn a blind eye to it. But the minute we want to enforce it, or even politically, I mean, you could imagine this being used to go after businesses they just don't politically align with or like. So they could maybe go in and enforce it on those businesses. They could selectively use this as a political weapon because they're unwilling to remove it from the books. So I wouldn't be surprised if that were to happen in the future. Of course, if they're going to maintain it, they're going to use it in some way. But as far as this playing out with midterms and the elections, I mean, at this point, nothing is going to save Democrats. I just don't think anything's going to save Democrats. I mean, I could be wrong. Anything could happen, I suppose. But I don't think anything saves them during midterms. And it would be hard to imagine anything saving Joe Biden in 2024. So you would think the logical thing would be for them to say, these policies didn't work, maybe we should change and shift. But for whatever reason, they're not willing to just say, okay, pandemic over, we were wrong, everyone's getting COVID, do what you need to do to protect yourself. They're just not saying that. So it's hard to even predict what they're going to do politically, because they seem to be committing political suicide and not even caring about it.
Representative Claudia Tenney, by the way, on this issue of, just to bring everyone up to speed, Novak Djokovic, among the best tennis players of all time and one of the best in the world right now, certainly among the probably top two or three, he's not going to be allowed to play in the U.S. Open under current U.S. government rules because he's a foreigner who's not vaccinated and they're not going to let him into the country. Representative Tenney tweeted about this regarding Djokovic being banned because of vaccine mandates. Today, I'm urging the Biden administration to issue a national interest exemption so that world-renowned tennis star Novak Djokovic and any other international athletes can compete in the U.S. Open. Biden should then drop the ridiculous mandate altogether. You tweeted out on this regarding Djokovic, we don't need an exemption. The entire mandate needs to end. Unvaccinated Americans can travel freely to Europe, yet unvaccinated Europeans like Djokovic can't travel here. Meanwhile, our four times dosed president has COVID. I think he just tested negative yesterday. When will the lunacy end? Kim, when will it end?
Good question. I don't know. These guys are just really seem to be hell-bent on wanting to commit political suicide on this. But, you know, look, if you are an unvaccinated American, you can travel to Europe freely. Novak Djokovic was able to compete at Wimbledon in England, and now he's not able to come here to the United States. And that is, this is just, what is going on here? Why are we still enforcing these mandates at the border, and really only for some people at the border? Not everybody at the border, I would imagine, is checked for vaccines. I would imagine at the southern border they're not doing that with people that are coming in. So to ban, and now I would actually say that Novak Djokovic is actually the best tennis player who's ever lived. If you look at his stats, he is, he doesn't have the number of grand slams that Nadal has.
The Nadal fans in the audience are yelling at you right now.
Yeah, I know,
now,
I'm sorry, okay. But keep it's going. True. Look at the stats. The stats are there. Nadal, obviously, Federer and Nadal, they're amazing. All three of them are fantastic. But Novak Djokovic is for sure, I think, and probably going to have more grand slams in the future if he's allowed to play. And if you're another one of these players, would you even want to compete in a tournament where the best is not allowed to compete against you? I mean, how do you take that win?
There's a vax mandate asterisk under next to whichever male wins if Novak Djokovic is not allowed to play. Kim, great to see you. Hope you join us again soon.
Thanks for having me.
New York City Mayor Eric Adams still lashing out at Texas Governor Abbott for giving the Big Apple a small taste of the crisis at the border. We have that story for you coming up in Quick Hits. Stay with us. Mayor Eric Adams keeps throwing shade at Texas Governor Greg Abbott, and President Biden gets a much-needed assist from the First Lady. We've got those stories for you in quick hits. Let's get to it. Okay, let's just start with a basic premise here. We're always told by the Democrats, by the libs, that illegal immigration is great, basically. Illegal immigrants work harder, are more law-abiding, and are just better than the people of America. This has been repeated as a talking point for many, many years. And that they make us wealthier, they make us richer, they increase GDP, and all they do is just make this country economically more vibrant. But we're told right away, no resources, no problems that have to be addressed. But then when you have enough illegal migrants being sent straight from the border to Democrat strongholds like New York and Washington, D.C., all of a sudden some of the people in charge in those places have a problem with it. Here is New York City Mayor Eric Adams, for example, saying that sending Texas migrants, or rather migrants from the border, this is what Governor Abbott of Texas is doing, to New York City is, well, I'll let the mayor say it. Watch.
It's unimaginable that what the governor of Texas has done. When you think about this country, a country that has always been open to those who were fleeing persecution and other intolerable conditions. We've always welcomed that. And this governor is not doing that in Texas, but we are going to set the right message, the right tone of being here for these families.
Unimaginable. Wait, what's the problem? It's all supposed to be so easy. It's no drain on public resources whatsoever. Illegal migrants arriving by the literal busload makes us all better, safer, stronger, happier, all that stuff, right? Isn't that the way it's supposed to go? So then why is it a problem? Oh, is this just a play for federal resources for New York and D.C. or something else at work here? Probably worth having a conversation about this. Biden is too old for the job. How many times do we have to say it? How many times do we have to go over this? Everyone knows it. He is too old for the job that he has. He never should have been put in this position. Here he is struggling to get his coat on, and then Jill Biden, oh, I'm sorry, Dr. Jill, steps in to help. Oh, yeah, he's fit as a fiddle, folks. Commander-in-chief, just put him in the game, coach. He's got all the energy. No way. Many of you are probably familiar with a website known as the Drudge Report. I used to have it as my homepage when I was in college. It used to be a great website you could go to and get a real sense of what's going on very quickly. It's a very simple interface. It's become lib in the last 5 years or so, which is a shame. You don't have the same. But it still draws a lot of traffic. Now, this is, I got to tell you, perhaps the greatest day in photography the Drudge Report has ever had. I want to show you. This is on the front page of the Drudge Report. Now that is that is President Trump. They got raided this entry. The big news story we talked about today. But I want to point out this photo, which is now the stock photo being used for news stories all over the world. There's something somewhat magical about it. Let's zoom in a little bit, shall we? Can you even really see it there? I hope so. That is yours truly in the background of that photo. The ultimate photo bomb. And hopefully on your screens at home, I hope they're not taking my word for it, guys, because it's kind of tough for me to see it, but hopefully it comes across. That is me, in fact, holding up a cell phone as the crowd roared when Trump walked outside. Here's a nice thing. During the Southwest Regional Little League Championship, a player had some good sportsmanship here. He got hit by a pitch, was an accident. And he went out and told the guy it's going to be okay. Watch.
Oh, look out. Wow, that is a tough kid right there. So this is really cool because as a pitcher, Bubs looks shaken up right now because of what he did. And look at Zay Jarvis. This is such great sportsmanship.
That's it for tonight's Hold the Line. The No Spin News with Bill O'Reilly is next. Shields high. Since 9/11, the Tunnel to Towers Foundation has been committed to supporting our nation's first responders and veterans, heroes who put their lives on the line for our communities and our country. Heroes like U.S. Army Major Jonathan Turnbull. Major Turnbull sustained devastating injuries at the hands of an ISIS suicide bomber. The complete loss of his left eye, a puncture to his right eye, he needed more than 20 surgeries and countless hours of rehabilitation. Tunnel to Towers paid off his mortgage and gave him a specially adapted smart home designed for his needs. He moves around his home more easily now. His home also gives him hope. With help from people like you, the foundation supports families like the Turnbulls. Join Tunnel to Towers in supporting America's heroes, our nation's catastrophically injured veterans and first responders, homeless veterans, Gold Star families, and the families of fallen first responders. Donate $11 a month to Tunnel to Towers at T2T.org. That's T, the number 2, T.org. 95 cents of every dollar goes directly to their programs.
Grand Canyon University, an affordable private Christian university, is one of the largest and fastest growing universities in the country, offering more than 270 programs online. In addition to federal grants and aid, GCU's online students received nearly $130 million in institutional scholarships in 2022. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu/myoffer to see the scholarships you may qualify for.
More Than a Movie is back with Season 2. I'm your host, Alex Fumero. And each week, I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to 500 Greatest Songs, a podcast based on Rolling Stone's hugely popular, influential, and sometimes controversial list. I'm Brittany Spanos.
And I'm Rob Sheffield. We're here to shed light on the greatest songs ever made and discover what makes them so great.
From classics like Fleetwood Mac's Dreams to the Ronettes' Be My Baby, and modern day classics like The Killers' Mr. Brightside.
Listen to Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Songs on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.